Oh my God, am I on? Oh no! Oh my God, I'm on. Okay, this is George Wilder Jr. The George Wilder Jr. Show. Sorry for the dead air. Let me see if I can't play something right quick. All right.
Hardest working man in internet radio is my father, George Wilder Jr., and here he is.
Okay, thank you. This is the George Wilder Jr. Show, a little bit late, a few minutes late, because I was doing something that was pressing, so I hope you there wasn't too much dead air that was exposed on this show. So thank you, and this is Sunday, October 25th, 2015. So, and happy Sunday to everybody, and everybody who went out there to worship their God. I mean, I hope everything went well. Okay, so here we are on the air again, and I was just telling my son he's going to host a show one day, or probably sooner than soon, because I want him to train him on being a radio host, and I think he is really enthusiastic about it. So we had some dead air here for a time, but that's okay, that's fine. And hey, 347-857-1762, taking your phone call. If you don't want to call in, sit back and listen and enjoy the show. Enjoy my rants as I do rant. Okay, it's 6:06 Chicago time. It's dark. And like I said in yesterday's show, summer's over. Summer is over. At least the daylight saving time is over. I mean, I'm not used to days getting as short as they are getting, but that's something we're going to have to deal with. And this is Sunday. You know, so happy Sunday to everybody. And let's get on with the show. All righty. Self-published, take control of your writing on the George Wilder Jr. Show. And I don't have a guest on the topic on the show to explain that topic or to talk about that topic. I will talk about a topic. I mean, I think I'm qualified. I'm a radio host. I am also an author. I've had plenty of authors on the show to give their take on taking control of your writing, you know, and I do think that because you want to control your stuff. You don't want other people to control it. So I'm going to be talking about that. I'm also going to be talking about some things in the news. Rauner, you know, we're going to talk about that again. Breaking the backs of labor, big business, so big business can run everything. We're going to talk about that. Illinois senators. I've talked about this yesterday. Illinois senators are not stepping up. We have two senators, just like each state has two senators. The two senators from Illinois are Mark Kirk and Dick Durbin. They are not stepping up to the plate to try to end this stalemate not having a budget for 4 months and going into five. We were supposed to have a budget by July 1st, but Rauner wanted to. He had other things in mind. That's why we haven't gotten it now. And these guys don't like each other. They don't want to meet with each other. They don't like talking. So a lot of the so there's going to be a lot of groups around town trying to get these three guys together, Culloden, Rauner, and Madigan, the three leaders in the state of Illinois, to try to get them to sit down and talk to each other, try to find out why can't they get a budget. We know why they can't get a budget. Rauner wants to bust unions, and they don't want to let him bust unions, along with other things. But busting union is one of the main topics, along with other things. Okay, and Rauner wants to put all of this stuff in the spending bill, and these guys, they don't want that in the spending bill. That should be separate. But Rauner says no. He's a rookie governor. He's a less than 1 year governor. And these guys, colored and Madigan, collectively have 70 years on him. And what makes him think he's going to come into Illinois and turn it upside down just like that? You know, but somehow he's managed to do that, turn it upside down for the worst. This guy, I've said this before, this guy is the worst governor this state has ever seen. This guy is the worst governor America has ever seen. And, of course, he disagrees, but most people who are under his regime do agree. I agree. This guy is a mess. He doesn't know anything about governing, because if he did, this state would not be in the gutter like it is. And like I said in so many other shows, the guy's just blaming other people. That's all he's doing, blaming other people, but he forgets he's the governor. He is the governor. Whatever's going on negative in this state, he takes the fall for, regardless whoever else might be involved. He is the governor, just like Obama. If something's not right in the United States or economy-wise, Obama takes the blame. Governor, this guy takes the blame, but he tries to throw the blame, shift the blame, and it's not working. I mean, he can't do that. He doesn't even have a year yet in government. However, in November, he will. He will be a first year. He will have his first year under his belt. But so far, officially, he doesn't have a year under his belt being governor of Illinois. And how in the hell he's going to come in here and tell us to treat him like a king, because we're nothing but paupers. Hoppers or whatever, you know. So, yeah, he is feeling a lot of heat. I mean, Rauner is feeling a lot of heat, but he's trying to deflect it. He's trying to deflect it on other people, saying they're to blame. They're the ones stopping him from doing his job. Nobody is stopping this man from doing his job. The only person that's stopping Rauner from doing his job is Bruce Rauner. Okay? All right, this is George Wilder Jr. of the George Wilder Jr. Show, broadcasting live from Chicago, 347-857-1762. It's beautiful. I feel good. All right, self-publish. Most of my material on it's self-published. I self-published my own writings. I create everything. I edit it. I revise it. I rewrite it. I do the covers. Everything that you see on one of my books or one of my short stories or essays, it's all George Wilder Jr., no one else. And that is what I like. The editing and everything is me. So if there's something wrong with the editing, the sentence structure, the format, you blame nobody but me, just like this radio station. Whatever's wrong, whatever's not wrong with it, whatever's going good, whatever's not going good, if it succeeds, if it fails, it will be because of me. There's nobody else to blame. There's nobody else to go to. And that's the way I like it. I don't want to be depending upon a lot of other people to do things for me when I'm well aware and well capable and knowledgeable and educated to do them myself. Why would I count on other people do? Because I've read so many books, other people's books, that were edited, formatted by other people, and it was just some of the stuff was garbage. And the thing about it, the authors paid to have this stuff done. They didn't pay. They paid to have this stuff done because a lot of writers don't. They don't know anything about formatting. They don't know a verb from a noun or a noun from an adverb. So they pay to go out and have someone to put their books together for them in a format, you know, to make it, you know, sound like a book or sound like a story. And a lot of times these guys and girls who are paid to edit books, paid to edit the books, do a really sloppy job at it. I've experienced it. And that's when I took it on for myself. And they want to charge you a lot of money for this and that and that and this, and they're doing a shoddy job on your book. Publish so you can own your book. You own the rights to your book. You own everything. You are in control of your book. Do not let other people be in control of your work, because all they're going to do is do a shoddy job and keep coming after you for money. Self-publish. A lot of people say, well, self-publishing, that's not good. You want to do a tradition? No, do not listen to other people. Listen to other writers who have experience in self-publishing. Now, I've had a lot of writers on this show, and they all give their take on how they came about with their stories. You know, I'm a story writer. I'm a storyteller. You know, I don't write too much fiction because I like to write stuff that's going to take the writer away. there's too much nonfiction around us already. I don't need to expound on that too much. But who knows? Who knows? But basically, take charge of your writing. Self-publish. The publishing industry has changed. It's not the same it was 5 years ago. It's not the same as it was 10 years ago. It's so easily, readily to self-publish your book than ever before. The publishers are pissed because, you know, Amazon has got a monopoly on this. And other websites, publishing, self-publishing websites, do so also. And you as the author, self-published. I'm not saying self-published just to be self-publishing. I'm saying self-published so you can take control of your work. Take control of your work. Do not let other people edit your work. You do it yourself. Edit your own work. Rewrite, revise, whatever you have to do to it. Rewrite, revise it until you feel that it's appropriate, and then show it to the world. You know, take control of your own work. Take control of it, you know. All right, had authors on the show, and they give a, I always ask them at the end of the interview or the end of the conversation. I like to have conversations with authors. Instead of having an interview, I like to make it conversations because that's more fun to make it a conversation, asking people questions. But anyway, I always ask them at the end of the talk or interview, I always ask them this question. Do you have any advice to give to aspiring writers? If someone wanted to write, how would you keep them writing? And to keep them positive about writing so that they do not give up on writing. Most of the authors say this. They say, just write. If you want to write, just write. In some ways, I agree with that. In some ways, I do not agree with that. Just write what? A letter? A paragraph? A sentence? A word? I mean, you have to be a little bit more, I think, elaborate. Not just say, just write. I mean, you got some authors who are writers, but they don't know how to explain what they do or how to explain how to just keep on writing. It's just write. But just writing is not being a writer, from my estimation, from my standpoint. I mean, if you're going to be a writer, know what you're going to write about. And most writers, the writer, you have to write what you know. If you don't know anything, you can't write. You can't just write. You know, write what you know, because I had an author show not too long ago, and she's right. Each and every one of us, we have a story inside of us. Each and every one of us have a story. We have an autobiography. We have a memoir. Whether boring or exciting, we have a story inside of us. That should be the first place you should start writing, writing about yourself. Because you know more about yourself than anybody. Growing up, your experiences, write about yourself. And who knows? It may become a bestseller because it'll be about you. It'll be an autobiography. You can call it my memoir. And it doesn't, and it could be at any age. So when writers say just write, they mean well, and I understand what they're saying, but you have to be a little bit more elaborate, and you have to kind of define it a little better than just write, because it's not going to happen. You have to write what you know, and you have to love what you're doing. You have to love what you're doing, and as a writer and as a published writer, we all need support. We all need that support because we need that support to help us to keep on writing. To help us to keep on writing. The more support you have, the more positive, what does that want to say? The more positive feedback that you can get, it helps you to keep on writing. And writing is fun. It is fun. Most of my writings are dialogue driven. You know, I love dialogue. I love conversation between two characters in anything that I write, because both all those characters are me, because I'm putting words in their mouth, right? That's fun. I'm just going back and forth. I mean, I'm working on a book right now, which is a rewrite of Derek Sweat Sings the Blues. This is no musical. I'm rewriting it, revising it. I'm changing the title, calling it Down in the Groove, because I think the title fits. It fits, and it is like so many of other things that I write, novels, short stories. They are dialogue-driven, and I think that's the way it should be, because I think most readers like dialogue. They like people talking and interacting with each other, you know, but you got to keep the story flowing. So my thing is, make your writing dialogue driven. And if it's dialogue driven, other readers are going to be attracted to it. Dialogue driven, people interacting with each other. Started off on the first page, the first, very first page of the first chapter. Have people interacting with each other. Get a story going right there on that first page, because that first page is going to tell the readers and the author if that story or that book or that author is going to go anywhere. Remember, thousands and thousands and thousands of books, e-books, writings are published every year. You have to figure out a way to make your stuff stand out from all the rest. And some of that stuff, some of those writings are good. You have to figure out how are you going to get your book out there in front. And not Jackie Collins' book, or not Danielle Steele book, or not George Wilder Jr.'s book, but you got to figure out how to get your book out there in front. It's book writing, novel writing is not lucrative. The only way, excuse me, the only way writing is lucrative, publishing is lucrative, unless it happens overnight. And one of the reasons why it's not lucrative, because too many people, so many people, thousands of people are publishing each year. Each year. And this is why you have to take control of your writing. Take control of what you write. Because you are You should be in control of your own work. Publicity, you should be in control of publicity, all types of marketing of your book, getting word of mouth of your book. You, no one else. You. And once your book starts to pick up steam, here comes the agents. Here come the publishers. They are coming after you because you have a book that they want because the public loves your book. They're going to be coming after you. And I've said this before. Do not go after literary agents. Do not go after any kind of agents. Do not go after publishers because that's a dead rejection for some people. Not everybody get rejected, but most people get rejected by these guys. I mean, one of my books was doing great and doing well, and all of a sudden, here comes agents, book agents, all kind of literary people coming after my book. Here come publishers asking me to come, you know, publish my books with them. You know, if the book was nothing, just stagnant, doing nothing, I would have never heard from those people. People would have stepped on me, spit on me. Oh, you ain't got a good book. We got to go. You know, so how many times have you heard people with best-selling books, at first, they had been rejected so many times? Rejected. Then all of a sudden, they self-published, their book went to number one. All of a sudden, here comes every kind of publisher there is coming after you because you had a number one book, and they want to publish your next book. The thing is to get these guys to come after you. Come after you. And the way you get them to come after you, you write good stuff. You write quality material. You marketed your book yourself. Publish it. You get it out there. You have to keep your book in front of the readers. You have to keep your book in front of buyers. You have to keep letting the world know that your book is out there. If you don't, it's not going to go nowhere. I don't give a damn if it's on Amazon. I don't care if it's on Barnes & Nobles or wherever it is. You don't tell someone about your book, about what you're doing, no one will ever know. They will never know. You have to. Sometimes it's annoying to some people to see that book in their face all the time. But they understand because you're trying to sell your book. Moreover, you're trying to let people know that you are a writer, that you can swim with the sharks, that you can be that your book can be a bestseller. This is why, and there's other reasons to being self-published, but the number one reason is taking control of your writing. Taking control of each and every one of your published books. No one else but you. You. And if your book flops, then it's your fault. If your book makes number one somewhere, it's your fault too, but it's a positive feeling. And this is going to cause you to keep on writing, especially with support behind you. Because when your book sells, every time I check one of my books or one of my short stories and it is sold, the next thing I'm thinking about writing my next book or my next story. You know, that's how I feel. I love writing. I'm pretty sure a lot of people out there do love writing, but writing is not lucrative. It will not make you rich. Maybe 1% of us authors probably, but it will not. If you don't do the right thing to get your book out there in front of other people so they can see it, know about it, and read it. And the word of mouth to me is better than any other kind of advertising or publicity you can get for your book. Word of mouth is great. I think it's greater. I mean, there are so many people who walk up to me and say, "Hey, Mr. Wilder, we want to put your book in the magazine or here." But the word of mouth is phenomenal. because people are talking about your book, and that's what you want. You want to get people to talking about your book. Nobody talks about your book, you can forget it. Excuse me. If nobody's saying anything about your book, nobody reading your book, nobody even know about your book, then it's going to die. And it doesn't matter how good it is. It doesn't matter how well it's written, formatted, edited. It doesn't matter. If nobody knows that your book is sitting there on Amazon, it's just going to sit there on Amazon, period. And I don't understand this. Some people who have 20 or 30 books up on Amazon, you know, you should never stop advertising your books. I don't care. If your books are 10, 20 years old, you should never stop advertising your book. Always advertise your book, you know, because your book can continue to sell long after you're dead. You know, always advertise your book. Let people know that your book is up there. Because a lot of books, there's a lot of books, e-books. I like e-books better. I mean, I'm an e-book writer. I don't even want paperbacks or hardbacks anymore. I don't want that stuff down in my basement sitting in the closet. Excuse me. But, you know, everybody is not like me. So self-publish. I mean, take control of your writing. Take control of your books. Take control of everything that you're doing. Put it in your hands. Don't put it in other. Don't rely on other people to do things for you, especially if it's monetary, if it's money, if it's investment. Do it yourself. If you're young, you're strong, you're vibrant, you're smart, you're talented. Self-publish. Take control of your stuff. Do not put what you love doing in the hands of others. How many horror stories have you heard about people going broke because they trusted other people with their investments? People going broke because they trusted other people to take care of their life possessions. You don't want that to happen. I don't want that to happen. Take control of your own things. If you don't know about self-publishing, there's plenty of websites around the internet that can show you. You're a writer. You can read. I mean, you know, so self-publish. You know, that's the way to go. All right, this is George Wilder Jr. of the George Wilder Jr. Show. I'll be right back. Stay with me, everybody. Thank you for being here. We just got through talking about self-publishing. Take control of your writing. Take control of your books. Take control of whatever you love doing. Do not put it in the hands of those who may not be right. Okay, Bruce Rauner's goal to bust Illinois unions. That's his goal. We're going to go from self-publishing, basically. And we're going to have writers on the show next week, and I'm going to talk to them about some of the same things. Like I said before, we had writers on the show. I have writers on the show who just say, write. You know, and I think it's a lot more than that, than just say write. Because you've got people with PhD degrees who can't write, at least not a novel, a character-driven kind of a novel. And that's nothing wrong with that, you know. So just writing is not kosher. You have to be a little bit more elaborate on just write, you know, because you have to know what you're writing about. You just can't write just to be writing. You have to know what you're writing about. And I say this again, and I'll repeat this. Every one of us have a story in us, inside of us. Every one of us have a story. You know, and the older you get, your story become more elaborate. You know, there's more to tell. So every one of us have a story. I've written my autobiography memoir. I called it Crying at the Moon. And it was a bestseller. It was about me. The only reason why I wrote about my, there's two reasons why I wrote about my life story. One, I thought it would be fun. It was fun. And it was fun. And I also thought that it was exciting. And I also thought I had a story to tell. And I knew it wasn't boring. You know, anybody could have wrote it probably. But anyway, it was exciting. I enjoyed writing it, and I thought I had a story to tell. For those who did not know me, of me, they knew my name, they knew my existence, but they did not know my story. So I wanted to put my story down for those who knew that I existed but did not know of my story. And we all have a story inside of us. We all can be writers. You know, because I'm a storyteller. People say, why do you write fiction? Because I love writing fiction. Why don't you write nonfiction? I have done nonfiction, but I am not a nonfiction person. I'm a dreamer, and maybe that's one of the reasons why I love writing fiction. I'm a dreamer. I like to create, invent, make up, you know. It's fun. It's like planning mud or something, but you know, hands all muddy and stuff. And I enjoy it. Like I just said, I like to write books and to read books that are character driven. And I love good writing. I really do. I devour good writing, you know, because I've read so much bad writing that I love good writing. And I always say there's a lot of competition out there. So make your writing as good and as of all quality that you can, because that's what sells. Good writing, quality writing, and word of mouth of your writing. You never know. I mean, there's room for everybody out here who are writers and authors. There's room for everybody, you know. But you have to get the word out about what you're doing. If you don't get the word about what you're doing, nobody will know what you're doing and nobody will care. You know, I mean, go where readers are. I mean, there's a lot of websites around where there's nothing but readers. Go where they are. Put your book right up there in front of their faces. You know what I'm saying? And go for it. But the main thing here is, the main gist of this is take control of your writing. Take control of your published books, e-books. Take control of them. My books, they're e-books, okay? Every now and then, I can republish them, re-edit them, take them down, refresh them, revise them, and publish them again. That's what I like about e-books. You know, like, let's say if I publish an ebook, and all of a sudden it's published, and I go to sample a little bit of my own book, and I see something that could be written a little differently, I would unpublish it, you know, revise it or edit it again, and I would republish it again back up there. And the buyers, the customers would never know that I took the book down and then put it back up there. That's what I like. One of the things I like about self-publishing, especially self-publishing of ebooks, they're so easy to take down, unpublish, revise, and put them back up there. And, you know, and it's easy. And it still sells. It's better than, because before ebooks, you know, I would have a box of books sitting on the floor over here, box of books over there, and I'm wondering, what am I going to do with them, you know. But there are times when I had boxes of books. I would take them to the park, and I would know some people over there, and they would actually buy my books. They would say, oh, George, you wrote this? Yeah, how much is it? $20. All right, thank you. And I would just walk around the book beach. Not the beach, but the park, walk around the park over here and just, you know, start selling my books. And that was great. It was like, you know, selling your books out of the trunk of your car. But yet this was like going to the park on a summer day, a beautiful day, crowded park. And I have a box of books, box of my own books, carrying it around and trying to and successfully selling them. But I don't have to worry about that kind of thing no more. And I don't miss that kind of thing, okay? Because now I'm doing ebooks. And most people have all kind of devices where they can easily download a book. Download it. I mean, and it's right there. Right there. You know, most of my short stories on Amazon are just 99 cents. You know, some of those stories are great. I should charge more, but 99 cents, okay. You get enough people buying a 99 cents book. That's a pretty good royalty. You know what I'm saying? So take charge of work. You writing, take charge of it. The first thing, if you want to write, if you're a writer and you're thinking about something to write about and you don't know, the first thing that you should write about is your life. Write a biography, autobiography, or a memoir of your life. Your life and the people who were your influences, the people who were not your influences, about your life. You have something to write about because we all have a story. I keep saying this. We all have a story inside of us. So don't just write, but just write about something. That would have been a more accurate way of saying it for some of these authors. Write about something, and something is about you, your life. And from there, you know, you can take off writing about anything else that you want, because your starting ground was writing about you, who you are, and self-publish it. Take control of it. And then polish it. Make sure it's quality written work. Tell everybody that you wrote it. So they can tell everybody that you wrote it. And so that other people can tell everybody that you wrote it. It goes on and on and on. Word of mouth. But I'm not just saying only do word of mouth. I'm just saying word of mouth is most important. Or you can go on websites and Facebook and LinkedIn and all of that kind of thing. That's great too. That's wonderful too. Google. But don't forget about word of mouth. That's great. All right. This is George Wilder Jr., the George Wilder Jr. Show, talking self-publishing. Take control of your writing. And that goes for each and every writer and author out there. Take control of it. Self-publish. You run your life, you run your work. You know, so don't let anybody take control of you or your work. You do it. It's your work. You do it. All right, here we go. Okay, now, let's talk about Bruce Rauner. I get so sick of talking about this, but I can't help it. I can't help it because I live in the state of Illinois, And there's so many other people living in the state of Illinois. And we still don't have a budget. You know what? It's a shame. I said yesterday, it's a shame that groups, certain groups, four or five groups around Chicago are trying to get these three guys together and find out what their differences are, as if we didn't know, but just getting them together so they can try to come up with something, a budget, to pull this state up out of the hole. But the thing is, it's a shame that people, other people who have nothing whatsoever to do with the budget in drafting and creating and putting together a budget has to drag these three assholes together and find out what the problem is. They can't come together on their own. And these are grown men. The governor, Mike Madigan, who is control of the House of Representatives in Illinois, and Cullerton, who is in control of the Senate in Illinois. These are grown men with power, and they can't seem to come together and to talk about anything. So certain groups around the around Illinois has to get these assholes together in a room somewhere and find out what the hell is it that they're letting this state rot. You know, so it's pathetic. It's pathetic, okay? Everything is shutting down. State museums are closing up. 911 centers, they're running out of money. People are going to be laid off. You know, people are threatened in a few weeks not to get their paychecks. And these, and I'm talking about 60,000 state workers in Illinois. It's a broken record. I can't help it. But it's something that has to be talked about each and every day. I'm not the only one that's talking about this. I mean, this is talked about every day in the media, downtown. People are always protesting downtown, protesting Rauner, protesting Madigan, protesting Cullerton, because these assholes will not get together to solve the problems of this state. These guys are making the problem of this. They're making the problems of the state. They're not solving them, because every day that this state does not have a budget, that's money. That's costing money, millions and millions of dollars. Because we don't have a budget. It's costing money. And these assholes are not going to pay it. It's not going to come out of their pockets. It's coming out of the taxpayer pocket. It's coming out of the middle class people's pocket. It's coming out of the pockets of the struggling poor. Not these rich assholes like Rauner, Cullerton, and Madigan, who are totally responsible for this mess. Rauner more often than they are. Because he's the governor. And now, from my understanding, from what I'm reading, he has agreed to this meeting on the 18th. I don't know. I think it's just going to be a political circus. That's what I think it's going to be. A political circus. I don't think this guy's going to do anything. But I do know that the legislature has been coming up with budgets, and Rauner has not been signing them. So that's where I fought his ass at. And I fought Michael Madigan and Cullerton because they are Democrats and they have control over the General Assembly, and they can override Rauner on anything that he opposes. But they keep saying they don't have the votes. So I don't understand it. So if they don't have the votes, that means that some Democrats are defecting to the side of the Republicans, and those Democrats who are defecting should have their asses thrown out, and they will get thrown out because we make sure that somebody runs against them in the next election. And there's nothing that they can say. It's nothing they can't lie. I mean, it ain't gonna work. But they will try to lie and will try to blame somebody. That's one of the things about these politicians in Illinois. They're always blaming somebody else. When it is clearly they are at fault, but they're going to try and blame somebody else. And they think that we're stupid enough and dumb enough to believe that. Some people are. Some people are stupid enough to believe it. And that's the shame part about it. That's the shame of it all. People believe stuff that they shouldn't believe. And that's why we have Republicans controlling everything just about around the United States, corporations. The poor people, they don't control anything. They ain't got no money. It's the rich that's trolling controlling everything. It's the rich. The middle class doesn't control anything. They don't have any money. They can't control nothing. They got to work every day to pay the bills. The corporations, big money, Wall Street, the lobbyists, the fat donors, they are controlling everything, especially our politicians, especially the politicians bought and paid for. Give me my receipt. All right, this is George Wilder Jr. of the George Wilder Jr. Show, broadcasting live, broadcasting live from Chicago. And I'm really kind of heated here. I mean, it just pisses you off. I mean, it really does, because we elect these people, and this is how they do. This is how they do when we elect them, because these three clowns, they act as if they just don't care getting a budget. I mean, Michael Madigan, John Cullerton, I've heard the guys talk. I would like to have one or two of them on my show. Boy, I would question. I got some questions for these guys. If I can get them on my show, I'm going to try and get some of these guys on my show and see where it goes from there. I can probably guess and try to figure out what they're going to say and how they're going to say it. You know, so I've seen some of these guys on PBS, NewsHour and things like that. But I like to have someone on my show so I can really try to get at the bottom of this. You know, I mean, because this is just crazy. You know,
you are now listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Block Talk Radio.
UPS. Okay, Christmas is coming. Yeah, Christmas is coming. A lot of people are ordering packages online. I mean, I'm hearing that online sales of packages for Christmas, New Year's. I mean, I'm hearing that the sales are exploding. Online sales are taking over just walking into a store from off the street. I lived on a street where I used to know this lady. She used to deliver packages to my building. She was in a small truck. This is a young lady. She was doing this for years and years and years. Suddenly, they gave her a big old huge truck, and she's just a small and skinny little lady, but she handles it. She knows what she's doing. The thing is that the number of packages being ordered online for UPS workers and other delivery outlets of packages are going through the roof. They are going through deliveries, are going through the roofs. And a lot of these landlords of some of these apartment buildings who are taking these packages in, all these packages that are being ordered online, they are being frustrated, overloaded with packages of for the tenants of those particular complexes, condos, you know, apartment buildings and other. They are being overwhelmed. One lady, I won't call her name, one caretaker of a building, and she started charging 50 cents or a dollar to get your packages from her office after it was delivered by UPS. Obviously, that was against landlord rules to charge a tenant for a package that they've already paid for, and also they have already paid for the shipping. Okay, so she was just probably frustrated of handling so many packages and thought she should get paid for handling packages that were ordered online and shipped to her building and to her building tenants. So I guess she thought that was a way to make a good buck or something. And, you know, no, I don't think they're going to tolerate that. That shouldn't have been done. But the bottom line is that some of these buildings are being overwhelmed with all of these packages, and they are thrust to take them in because that's one of the amenities for being a tenant of that particular building or buildings, that you can get your package delivered there instead of going out to the post office or the UPS office or FedEx office or wherever you go, or either to the Amazon office to pick them up, because the packages will arrive right there in your building, your apartment building. But the office downstairs, the caretaker or the landlord or whoever is in charge of the building is down there. They take the packages in, and it's an amenity of the building. But some people are trying to charge money to get your own package. Now, for me, I get a lot of packages too, all right? I get a lot of packages. But you know what? I've always preferred the packages that I get, the orders that I order online, they come to the building. I would prefer to go out and just pick my package myself, because I don't trust a lot of people, and I rather for my package to be delivered to the outlet so I can go pick it up. That's the way it is with Walmart. You know, if I order something from Walmart, which I don't anymore, I just go pick it up at a store. And that way I'll know I get my package, because I don't trust a lot of things. I don't want my package open, lost, or damaged. So that's why. But a lot of times my package comes to the building, it goes downstairs, and all of a sudden I realize I have a package in the office. All of a sudden the office is closed for a week. Wow, I can't get my package for a week, okay? And then when she is down there to give me my package, she's charging me for it. That's not right. But anyway, I would love to go pick up my package, then have it delivered to the building. You know, but sometimes that can't be done, because before I can get to the deliverer, they done dropped it off at the office. You know, so sometimes that's good, sometimes it's not good. It depends on when the office is open and who is down there to give me my package. You know, but basically what I'm talking about, online sales is booming. It's a booming thing. It's booming. This Christmas, this New Year's, I mean, even Thanksgiving, around Thanksgiving, people get gifts around Thanksgiving. And a lot of this stuff is, like I said before, is done online. And hey, yours truly, I will be ordering, online also. Because I find it so convenient to order online. But I don't like putting my credit card information into a computer. So I try to go to secure sites, websites that I know about. And I do not use Wi-Fi when I'm putting my information into my computer. And I suggest you don't either. Use a hardline, you know, if you're going to order something, you know, because Wi-Fi, totally not secure. I ought to know, because I remember one time I was working at this place, and they had a computer room. So there was about, I mean, maybe 10 people in the computer room on computers, right? And that there was this back room that I would go into, and that had this lone computer. And I would sit down at that lone computer. I worked there. I would sit down at that lone computer, and I could see what each and every one of those 10 people were doing on that one computer in that back room where I was sitting. And you know what? It was scary. It was Wi-Fi. I seen everything they were doing. They didn't know I was looking. And ever since that day, I realized I do not want to do anything that has to do with Wi-Fi. Give me a hard line. Give me a secure website, you know, because even in my studio, my radio studio where I'm at right now, I have Wi-Fi. But I've turned the Wi-Fi off. You can turn it off. And I'm using a hard line. One of the things about doing a radio show, like, see, if I try to do this radio show with Wi-Fi, it would be weakened. There would be cracks and breaks and all kinds of things. You would hear. I wouldn't hear it, but you would hear it. Breaks and cracks and, you know, in the show, because the Wi-Fi is a lot weaker for this radio show than it is when I'm on the radio show using a hard line. That means just plugging the computer into the wall or something, you know. That's, you know, and getting that juice from the wall socket. And it is safer. It's much safer. So getting back to what I was talking about, Christmas and holiday packages, even before Christmas, even before this holiday, even back up in the summer, even winter of early 2015, the packages that are ordered online are enormous. I mean, because when I go downstairs to the lobby of this building, I mean, I'm seeing all kinds of packages lined up against the office door where there's nobody to accept the packages. That's why so many packages that are delivered to buildings and homes, they sit out, and that makes it easy for thieves. So every time I go downstairs and I see a bunch of packages piled against this office door, I always go there and check the packages, see if there's anything for me. So therefore, my packages does not have to go in the office for me to retrieve it a week later, because there's nobody down there to give me my package. And like I said before, I would love it if they didn't deliver my packages here, but I got to figure out how to do that. And I think I do. I think I do, because a lot of times when you're ordering a package, the company that you're ordering from or the people that are going to be delivering your package, they give you an option of having your package delivered at your address or at a close by store. So that's a good thing. That's a good thing. And I have done that, but sometimes you can't. But some companies don't have that. They don't have a store where you can go pick. You have to pick it up at your building. And I hate that, because I don't trust my package to be sitting down there close by a door, unsecure, where anybody can come in there and take your package. And then hey, what? The building has a lawsuit on his hands. All right, this is George Wilder Jr. of the George Wilder Jr. Show, broadcasting live from Chicago. It's 7:04 straight up. I think it's around 69 degrees. Not 69, but more like 59, you know, but it's beautiful. It's dark. All right. Okay, we talked about packages. And like I said before, Bernie Sanders, if I can get back to politics, Bernie Sanders, his poll numbers are down, and he's attacking Hillary Clinton, but yet he's saying he's not attacking Hillary Clinton. He should be. He's down in the polls, and Hillary is about to spank him, you know. So one of the things Bernie Sanders has addressed is two words, socialist and communist, because those two words are words that he is now being associated with. Socialists from the Republicans, communists from Donald Trump. Donald Trump is the Republican candidate, one of the Republican candidates for 2016 president. He'll never be president. That's no way. Ben Carson, with his crazy looking butt, he will never be president. These guys just going through the motion. But however, I do think that Trump is going to be the nominee. I mean, because these other guys, these other Republicans, they're falling flat on their face in his presence. They are weak. They are just melting, coming apart in his presence. He's going to be, and there's no doubt about that, he is going to be the nominee. Therefore, I think Trump is going to be running against Hillary Clinton, because I think Hillary Clinton is going to get the nomination. I've said so many times I was a Bernie Sanders supporter, and I am. But you have to look at the tea leaves. The wind is blowing in Hillary's direction. And Bernie Sanders is having a uphill climb. I'm not saying he won't get the nomination, but Hillary, like I said, the wind is blowing in her favor, in her direction. Bernie is not too far behind. He's doing great. He's doing good, but I think he screwed up at the debate when he cuddled her. You know, he cuddled her like he wanted to vote for her himself. And plus, she did a great job at that old farce Benghazi hearing with all the loathed Republicans. She did a great job there. She made them look bad. She made them look like the assholes they are. She looked presidential. Bill Clinton is out there now. He looked like he done lost so much weight. He looked like he just deflated. And it's kind of heartening to see that he's going to be in the White House again. He was one of my favorite presidents. He used to be my favorite president. Remember when they were saying Bill Clinton was the first African-American president, even though he's white? Bill Clinton is the first president I actually seen in person. He came to Chicago one time, and we had a rally, and I went down there, and we saw him and all that kind of thing. I made my way downtown to actually see Bill Clinton, because I admired him for some reason. I don't know. Maybe I was young and naive, but I admired the guy. And he's the first president that I actually saw in person or that I wanted to see in person. I never wanted to see Barack Obama in person. I tried to stay away. I never wanted to see him because I just thought he wasn't on the up and up with African Americans. And I still don't think he is. Okay? I mean, I'm not going to get into it. Maybe I'll get into it a little bit down the line at some point. And maybe I even may even write a book about it. Who knows? A book on Barack Obama and my thoughts. Everybody doesn't have to agree with my thoughts, but I was thinking about it, writing a book, a political book on Barack Obama after he gets out of office, you know, after he's gone, and just pen a book, you know, because I got a feeling that once Barack Obama is out of office, a lot of people are going to come out of the woodwork and say a lot of negative things about it. I just got that feeling, you know, they don't want to see it now because he's in office, but once he leaves, I think Obama's going to be you know, saying a lot of things. That wasn't true. That's not true. I didn't do that. But I have a feeling that it's going to be something, you know, once he leaves office. You know, so I'm thinking about penning a book, a political book on Barack Obama, you know. So that could happen. It could happen. It may not happen because right now I'm working on a lot of stuff already. All right, this is George Wilder Jr. of the George Wilder Jr. Show, 347-857-1762. thanks for listening. Thanks for being out there. Thanks for putting up with my rants. I mean, if you disagree, you disagree. You know, I don't try to please everybody. I never will be able to do that, and I don't try. I try to come up with topics that you can agree to or you can disagree to, debate it. That's what it's all about. That's what makes the show fun. It makes the show fun when people actually disagree because everybody, oh, George, you're right. George, that's true. Well, you know, that's absolutely right. That's totally correct, George. That would not be any fun. Oh, George, you don't know what you're talking about. Now, that's fun. All right, we're going to take a break right here. I'll be right back. Stay with me, everybody. Big George here. If you have a product or a book that you would like to have advertised on this show, book. You are listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on the Wilder Network, WTTTY, the talk of our times. You miss a show, you will miss a hell of a lot. Thank you for listening and stay with me.
You are now listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Black Talk Radio.
All right, we're back. We are back. Let's see. What were we going to so self-publishing, take control of your writing. Take control of your writing. Take control of your life. Don't even let anybody try to control your life. Control your own life. You are one. Don't let other people tell you how to, where to sit, when to stand, what to say, where to go, who to talk to, who not to talk to, what to talk about, what not to talk about. Live your own life. Do what you want. Because if you let people do all of that kind of stuff to you, you're really not in control of your life. You're letting someone else be in control of your life. And you will get nowhere with your life if you let other people control it. They will try. They want to. It makes them feel good. Yeah, it makes other people feel good when they're controlling you. They like it. Because if you let them control you, you're only one thing. You're weak. And they saw your weakness. And they went after that weakness. Do not let anybody tell you what to do. If it's not your mother or your father, or your sister or your brother, don't let them tell you what to do, even if it is your mother and father, sister or brother. You have a brain, think for yourself. Don't let other people tell you how to think, what to think, when to think. But you know what? You have so many of themselves fall into that kind of a trap. And it's unbelievable how many people let themselves be controlled. And then they try to contact other people to try to recruit other people in being controlled. Well, they controlling me, man. You could let them control you. No way. It ain't going to happen. It is not going to happen. This is George Wilder Jr. of the George Wilder Jr. Show, broadcasting live from Chicago. And it's 7:15 in beautiful, beautiful Chicago. We are still in an Illinois shutdown, and it's something I just talk about. Okay, United Auto Workers set to strike at midnight tonight. Obviously, these guys want more money. But you know what? These guys better watch it. These guys who are building our cars, they better watch it, because robots are going to be taking their jobs. You know, and this is for real. Robots are going to be actually half the cars built in this country, if not three quarters, are built using robots. And maybe in 5 or 10 years, it's going to completely be robots. So they're talking about striking. They're talking about unions. You know, all of this stuff is going to be eliminated. And you ain't going to be making no money. So you're going to have to find another way to come up with your house payment. So these guys are supposed to be going out on strike tonight. And tonight is Sunday the 25th, 2015. Okay? So by the end of this broadcast, it's a few hours from now, from what I'm hearing and understanding, they will be on strike. So we get ready for that, all right? So if you don't have a car, then maybe you're going to have to wait a while. Okay. All right, robbers on the rise on college campuses. I think robbers are on the rise in Chicago, period. It's just another element of crime. That's all it is. More crime in Chicago. Where is the damn police? They're supposed to be patrolling. They're supposed to be patrolling. They're not. These guys still don't have a plan to end crime in Illinois. So they really should get rid of McCartney, Superintendent McCartney, because this guy does not have a damn clue. He keeps coming up with plans. I see him all over the television set trying to defend his department and his actions and his plans for crime. The only thing that I've heard so far that he's trying to get guns off the street by buying them back. That means you turn in your gun, you get a gift card or something. If a person has 10 guns and they turn in two, that's not getting guns off the street. If a person has 20 guns and turn in three broken guns for three gift cards, that's not getting guns off the street. These people, even when he talked about that, which was about 2 weeks ago, we have had several shootings out here. And I'm going to say this, no one is going to give up their gun. People are going to hold on to their guns for no damn gift card. People are going to hold on to their guns because they want their guns. If someone is giving a gun up for a gift card, that means that person who is giving that gun up has two or three more other guns stashed away somewhere. Nobody is going to give up their precious gun, especially if they got a legal gun, even illegally, because they're saying, we'll buy your guns back, give it the gun, turn in your gun, no questions asked. Yeah, they're going to turn in a gun. They're going to turn in a broken one. They're going to turn in a gun and have three other guns stashed away someplace for a gift card. How much is a gift card? $50? $75? What are they going to do, go out and buy some candy? I have no idea. But anyway, it's it's crazy. I don't think that's going to make a dent in crime. That is one of McCartney's plans, to get guns off the street by offering people gift cards or money. It's a buyback program, you know. So, you know, I wouldn't, you know, give my gun up to no one. I mean, especially with all this crime around here, you can't walk down the street, you know. So I don't think that's a plan he's got. Well, it's better than no plan at all, but I don't think it's going to work. A lot of us think that plan is not going to work. A lot of people are giving reasons to why they think that's not going to work. You know, but hey, it's a try. I think what's going to work is saturating these crime-ridden neighborhoods and communities with police officers. There was a time when Quinn was governor. He talked about, let me reiterate, he just talked about putting the National Guard and some of the U.S. Army in some of these neighborhoods. I think even Obama had asked them once, do you need help? And he asked both Emmanuel and Pat Quinn, Governor Pat Quinn, did they need any help with crime? And they turned it down. No, we can handle it. No, you can't handle it. 100 people have been shot and killed since then. 200 probably injured since then, and they turned down help. I mean, if you put the National Guard in the Inglewood area, one of the high crime areas, them assholes will be shooting at the National Guard or the Army. They're bold. They don't care. They be out there in front of them. So, we have yet to see, and we've seen it already. I think it's a failure already because people have gotten shot already. But McCartney insists that it's going to work. How do he know it's going to work? We have crime in Chicago is higher than crime in New York City, and New York is bigger than Chicago. New York City is the biggest city within the United States. Chicago is the third largest. From what I'm hearing, we are shrinking. We will soon be the fourth largest because people are leaving the state. Why are they leaving the state? They're leaving because Rahm Emanuel, high-ass taxes. They're leaving because of Governor Bruce Rauner, no budget, and it's costing the state more and more and more. Credit agencies have been downgrading this state, I mean, like almost every damn day because of no budget, because of the fighting, because they can't stand each other. And the thing about it, these guys, like I said before, these guys seem like they're just standing around watching this happen. It's the politicians that are ruining every damn thing. We vote these clucks, these knuckleheads, these people in office, and all they do is ruin our lives and walk away and lie about it and blame others about it. I just don't know. This is not right. This is not right. This is not right. And I keep coming back to it. Okay, this is George Wilder Jr. of the George Wilder Jr. Show, broadcasting live on Chicago. Yeah, and another thing that's happening in Chicago is that tourism here, you know, I mean, this is a great city. This is a beautiful city. It's a wonderful city. It's a great-looking town. That's why tourism is up in this city. However, the people from other countries that come here to just enjoy Chicago for a little while, they are being robbed and stuck up. They are becoming victims of crime. And they're going to take it back to their cities, their countries, or wherever, and they're going to talk about Chicago's crime. Hey, we were mugged in Chicago. Because these people were from Britain. They were British. They were mugged in Chicago, among other tourists. They take this back to their countries, you know, and they say, well, we were mugged in Chicago. That's another black eye. That's an international black eye on Chicago. Where was the police? You know, that's what you ask. People getting robbed and mugged and stuck up on the street corners. Where is the police? Aren't they patrolling? Aren't they riding around in their patrol cars looking? Aren't they walking the beat? Where were the police? This is a town where you are supposed to always see the police. You don't see the police. The bad guys know where to find the police. The bad guys know where not to find the police. And where not to find the police, that's where they are. Now, there's some areas in Chicago that the police do not patrol as much as they do some other areas. Now, you'll find the police probably in more crime-ridden areas than areas there where there is hardly any crime. But still, in all, we should see the police. And I'm not talking about every 30 minutes, every hour, every 40 minutes, every 20 minutes. We should see the police every 5 minutes driving around in these neighborhoods. Every 5 minutes. But sometimes you don't see the police all damn day. I'm talking about every 20 minutes, every 30 minutes, you don't see them all damn day. And then when something happens, you know, I'm pretty sure Murray Manuel or McCartney said, hey, where were you guys at? Weren't that your beat? Weren't you supposed to be around there? But after someone has been shot, after a murder occurs, guy or girl is shot and laying in the street, oh, man, you see a whole bunch of police then. You see a lot of police. They just standing around, and the bad guy has gotten away. But all they do at a crime scene is stand around, you know. Why aren't you running after the bad guy, trying to pursue the bad guy, instead of just standing around over the body or standing around near the body? All right, this is George Wilder Jr. of the George Wilder Jr. Show. And so we have about three or four more minutes in the show. So thank you for listening. Thank you. Let me see if I can bring up this audio. All right, here we go. Stay with me. We got it? Okay. And the
compassion.